When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The other right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door,
this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this happy Thanksgiving episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And today, I have my partner in crime, if you will, and my partner on Bloody Angola, the podcast, in the studio with me, Jim.
How are you, Woody Overton? Excited to be on Real Life Real Crimes feed.
Love it, right? You produce it every time anyway. But y'all, so it's Jim Chapman, right? And the owner of Vision Podcast Studios and everything. As y'all know, he's our producer for Real Life Real Crime. And we want to do a little something different this week because we know everybody's traveling and doing all that stuff. But we have another podcast called Bloody
Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison. And y'all will hear, if you listen to Bloody Angola, you'll hear that's how we open each episode. So we had an idea this week on Bloody Angola. We're going to drop an older Real Life Real Crime episode. And on Real Life Real Crime, we're going to drop one of our favorite Bloody Angola episodes to get to introduce both markets, both sections of our listeners to each show. And we hope you go in and you enjoy it. And it's just Thanksgiving time, right?
That's right. And what could be better, Woody, than basting that turkey or
frying that turkey, gotta inject it too.
Yeah, smoking that hog, yes, whatever you're doing on Thanksgiving, right. Even if you're eating pizza,
even if you're driving to grandma's house, you go over the hills you go, right?
That's right. That's right. Couldn't be anything better than listening to true crime podcasting at its best. And so, we're kind of flip flopping each other's shows,
But So this show, y'all, we're going to release Bloody Angola. It will release the first episode of the Brent Miller series. And y'all, this one's tough, but it's all true, historically correct. And for us to do the story about Brent Miller, who's someone I've heard about since I was a little boy. My mama has a personal connection. She was his teacher, and you know, the firing range now at Angola is named for him and everything else. But I heard about him my whole life. But for us to get to do the Bloody Angola series, if you will, on Brent Miller, for me, it was priceless.
Yeah, me too. And like what he said, very hard episode to listen to at times, but in one of my favorites ever that we've recorded to date.
I think it's one of the most important, certainly. And the one thing you get on Bloody Angola, everything is different. You got a lot of the hard stories like this, but then you know, some of the first ones we opened up with, like the Walls and the Hill Street Gang, are more historical, but it's all correct. And a lot of stuff I didn't even know, right? Yeah. And I worked at Angola, right? Yeah. But we want y'all to hear this story and to hear Bloody Angola, the podcast, because if you like real life, real crime, you're going to love Bloody Angola.
100%.
And so Brent Miller, I'm not going to give you all the details on it. We just want y'all to listen to it. And we want, for us, it was about remembering Brent Miller.
That's right.
And not the pieces of shit that did what they did that became famous later on.
Agreed.
Right. And I would tell you this, I'll give a little teaser. When you listen to this, you're going to love it on Real Life of Crime. When you hear that last episode, wait till you hear what happened the day we dropped the first episode. I can't even tell you what happened. You just go listen to it. Somebody became infamous or very famous, if you will. Actually, something happened to the last one of those guys that day that we dropped it. I don't think that's a coincidence.
I don't either. There are no coincidences, according to Woody Evers.
That's true, especially not in a criminal case.
Yeah.
Without further ado, other than we want to say happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
To you and everyone you love. And we're so thankful for y'all. And I'm so thankful for all you lifers. So thankful for everything that you've given me and blessed me with. In Bloody Angola, same way. I'm certain a certain percentage of y'all do listen to Bloody Angola. We want to say thank you too.
Yeah, thank you very much. We are two guys here that are blessed way more than we deserve.
Every second of every day.
Every day.
And Patreon and Convicts, of course, you'll get it commercial free and early. And Chase team members, of which are y'all that for your lifers that haven't listened to Bloody Angola, Chase team members are our subscribers. Like Patreon and Convicts and Real Life Real Crime. So you'll get Real Life Real Crime episode we're going to drop for y'all on Bloody Angola. So we're just swapping it out. Thankful, blessed beyond measure. Hope you enjoy it. Love and appreciate each and every one of you.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Woody, for having me on Real Life Real Crime to introduce this episode.
Thank you for producing the this year four-time award-winning.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Just this year. So, but thank you. But thank all y'all. And hey, go subscribe to Bloody Angola. If you like this episode, then you're going to love it. Go subscribe to it. Share it everywhere. These stories that we tell, they're not always hard like this. There's some redemption stories. There's some different stories about the prison that you just, you know, describing things, everything from rules to the layout of the prison to whatever, the history, everything else. So just share it in with everybody that you know. If they like Real Life Real Crime, you're going to love Bloody Angola.
Yes.
All right, so that's it. And here comes your Thanksgiving episode of Bloody Angola on Real Life Real Crime.
Brent Miller and the Angola 5, part 1.
One, baby. Happy Thanksgiving, y'all.
Happy Thanksgiving.
This is the story of America's bloodiest prison, told by the people who lived it. both inside and outside its gates. A brutal history as you've never heard it before. From its origin as a slave plantation to its gradual growth as the bloodiest maximum security prison in America. To those outside its gates, it's known as Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. But to those who have spent time inside its gates, it's known as Bloody Angola.
Come with us as we take you through the gates and give you a firsthand look at not only the stories of the stabbings, rapes, executions, escapes, and murders you won't find on any TV show or the internet, but also the murders, abductions, attacks, and hostage situations of the staff and their families, otherwise known by the convicts as free people.
Bloody Angola is a comprehensive, no-holds-barred podcast that takes you on a journey through time from its inception as a slave plantation to America's largest maximum security prison, where 80% of its population will die inside the wire.
Get mentally prepared. Sit back and listen as we cover these stories in detail
in ways that you've never heard before from people that lived it, breathed it, and died with it. Bloody Angola. Warning, Bloody Angola is a podcast covering actual events and is intended for mature audiences.
The subject matter discussed in no way reflects the personal opinions of the host or sponsors of this podcast.
Thank you.
Just want to welcome everybody back to Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Yes, and I'm Jib Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And we want to welcome you today. We have a story, y'all, that, Woody, how would you describe this?
For me, it's been a lifelong story. I've heard this story since I was a little boy, and it just goes back. It's very powerful. It's very controversial. It's horrible, yeah. On all sides, but it's a story that needs to be told.
And it's very personal to the Overton family personally.
Right. And you know, when you say the Overton family, you're correct. My dad's dad haven't been the judge up there, but my mom's dad started out in Angola as the first parole officer ever lived there. And y'all know me, digress, in the last show, and I said my mom was raised on Angola, but I meant they lived there for numerous years until my grandfather got accepted in the LSU Law School, and then they moved to St. Francisville, okay? So, but St. Francisville and Angola, basically the same people. Everybody knew everybody, and they ended up all going to school together in the end. So my mama said, hey, you got to – make sure, he said, all my friends know that I wasn't raised my whole life on Angola, right?
Yeah.
On the beeline, but I knew all those people. She said, I still know them. And yeah. Today I was talking to her and she's telling me, oh, but this person married this person. I mean, very small community. I think maybe her high school graduating class had like 28 people or something like that.
Yeah.
And I can relate to that, but it's to this day, this story, I mean, it's 40-something plus years afterwards, 48, 50 years afterwards, I guess, almost.
Yeah.
It's still very controversial and very hard to hear, and we're going to get into all that.
It really is, and so, folks, if any time you wanted to borrow a term from Real Life Real Crime, heed that warning.
Yeah.
This will be the episode to do it. It's a very sensitive subject we're discussing today and a very hard story to hear.
Right. And we warn y'all that these stories are going to get more progressive as they go. And we weren't bullshitting you.
Yeah. Yeah. We were, you know, it's like that slow tease, and now we're about to slam you.
For real.
So.
I tell you this, on this story, my mama, won't say her age, my mama, after all these years, still cries every time she talks about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, Woody, I guess go ahead and let's kind of start it off, and well, I'll interject where I can.
As we told y'all before, a lot of the people, free people who work in Angola are generational, and they have lived there for many, many, many years, many generations. And since we dropped the first episode, Jim, and I think I told you this, we've had so much outpouring to us from people who are basically are lifers, not lifers from Real Life Real Crime, but like when I say lifers, I mean generational. They grew up on Angola, and a lot of them still work there, have reached out to me personally, and they're like, oh my God, you know, the stories, et cetera. But it's, when I say generational, I mean they were birthed at Angola.
Yeah.
Their daddy and mama worked at Angola. Their grandparents worked at Angola. Their grandparents worked at Angola, and you grow up on the beeline and you don't really even know the outside world. You get busted into St. Francisville for school now, but you're going to grow up and be a correctional officer. Most of them, a lot of them. And in this case, we're going to talk to y'all about today. That's exactly what happened. All right. Brent Miller was a generational correctional officer. He grew up on the beeline, and as did generations of his people. Now he had some family in Amite, Louisiana also, but he grew up on the beeline, and my mama, I told y'all, lived there to whatever age. And then she went out and she became a teacher before she became a lawyer. And she taught Brent, and she can't remember if it was sixth or seventh grade, but she taught him in school. And she distinctly remembers him. She said, of course, it's easy to remember the really bad ones. Like she can call a kid's names, like the principal's like, you're not even going to get anything out of them. It's right. Just some kids would show up. And these were Angola kids, okay, that she was teaching. So some of them show up and they wouldn't even answer a question on the test. They didn't care, right? Yeah. They were going in to be a correction officer. They didn't give a shit about school. But she said, Brent, she can see it right now in her mind's eye today as a young boy, crew cut, you know, the flat top was the thing back then. And she said he was such a sweet boy and a good looking kid and very athletic and just as nice and well raised as a kid could be, you know, like you and I would hope our kids are. That's what she said, you know, very, very respectful, very clean cut, comes from a good, hardworking family, generational correctional officers. And she taught him, but years later, when my grandfather was a lawyer and he had his office right there on the main drag in St. Francisville, mama said she stopped by to get something out. My mama was in law school at the time. She said she stopped by to get something out of the attic, and Brent Miller was there. And he came up, hey, Miss Sandra, and gave her big hugs and kisses. And he said, you know, you were my favorite teacher. And you know, a lot, evidently, and that's happened at like my aunt's funeral and stuff. Grown-ups now naturally would come up to mom and say, oh, you didn't teach us for long, but you made a big impact on us, right?
Sure.
So Brent Miller comes up, big smiles. My mom was crying today, she said. Biggest smile, really good-looking young man, you know, he was like 20 in early 20s, right? And she was like, hey, she said, what are you doing here? She said, I got to get something out of that. He said, you let me get that for you, Miss Sandra. You don't need to get that. And so he went up and got it. a piece of furniture and brought it down and said big smiles, helped her load it up and gave her big hugs. And she says, Woody, I can see it in my mind right now.
Yeah. You know? He made an impression, and obviously a very mannerly kid. He was raised right. And as Woody just mentioned, she remembered him from when she taught him when he was younger. Now he's grown. Right. And Brent Miller was a athletic, large human being, right? Corn-fed country boy.
Right. And back then, they didn't have the steroids and the weightlifting and everything like we did now. But I saw a picture, I sent it to you, a picture of him. He was a star athlete in the high school, football player, a wide receiver. I mean, and he was a stud.
Yeah.
But his high school days, everybody loved him. Everybody that knew him, every account I've ever read, everybody I ever met, I talked to about this, that's from there. Said he was just the best dude. Right?
Yeah.
So he'd go on to graduate. What does he do? Immediately goes to work in Angola.
Yeah.
As a correctional officer.
Generational. You know, it's and folks, think about it like in regular society. A lot of times you know, if your mom and dad were an attorney, you become an attorney. Except, unless you're Woody Overton.
Except for me. All my brothers and sisters became attorneys. Yeah, I'm the exception.
But a lot of people follow in their family's footsteps in a lot of different fields. And so no different in the Angola War.
Right. And let's talk about that for a second, because I know when I worked in corrections, I wasn't making anything, right?
Yeah.
But for me, for a young man, it seemed like I was making a lot. But you quantify it in today's money, I wasn't. But the generational families that are raised on Angola, you had your housing on the B-line. Your house was always maintained. Shout out to Astepro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
My allergies are throwing my whole morning off. Do I sound different to you?
I love it. You sound like, it's that time of year there, bro.
I sound different to me. I feel like I'm in a submarine.
Yeah, well, have you tried Astepro? It's faster, bro.
Oh.
All right? Astepro is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Hey, I use this. And you should too, Jim. Last weekend, I planted my garden, and it's that time of the year, and my allergies really kicked up with it, right? I use Astepro every time my nasal allergies flare up, and I'm always amazed at how fast I'm back in the game, down on those rows, planting my stuff.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go today. AsteproAllergy.com. It's faster, bro. Uses directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Astepro and go.
Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she preferred to do that, or she can do both. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
Pain by inmates. It was always freshly painted. Your yard was freshly cut. Your house was cleaned every day. Your 3 meals were cooked. You had your own personal butler, basically.
Yeah.
And so that was nice, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But that was just the way life was. You had your own trustee assigned there. And I asked my mom about this. Were you ever afraid? Because, the beeline is inside the wire. I mean, it's not far from death row, right? And the prisoners, you got murderers working in your house. And we'll tell some stories about that in the future.
Yeah.
But I asked her, were you ever afraid? She said, no. Hell, we played in the street. And I remember the inmates were always around us.
Yeah, no crazy, fear. Right? Yeah, it really is. But when you're raised in that environment,
you don't know any different.
You don't know any different.
It's crazy. That's right. And so Brent goes back. Well, he goes to work in Angola, and he meets. Or actually, he knew her his whole life. Actually, so he was 23, and he just married a girl that he knew his whole life, and then they were in love. They actually got married when she was 16, and which wasn't uncommon back then, right? They prayed together, they worked together, they whatever, and it was kind of an unspoken thing that Brent and she were going to get married.
Yeah. He had known this girl's entire life. The families were probably besties.
Yeah, you talk about small-town America, like where I grew up, where everybody knew everybody's business. Imagine how it was on the beeline. When it's that small.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's like you can't get any smaller.
Yeah.
But – and then your people are working together every day. You know, my grandfather went to work as a parole officer. My grandmother went to work as a guard in the women's part, right? So, and when your day's off, you're doing everything together. So Brent knew this family. These families knew each other. They worked together. They got married. They were very in love. She was a beautiful girl. He was a really good-looking clean-cut kid, and they got married.
Yeah, yeah, in love, and on the way to a long life together.
Right,
and this was and everything was gravy.
Right,
back then.
And so Brent had been working as a correction officer for a little bit, and he was very well liked by both the staff and the convicts, the inmates, and they liked him. Everybody liked him.
Yeah.
But it was a really hard time, y'all, at Angola.
Yeah, it really was. And we want to kind of hammer down this point to you, to everyone, that it was not uncommon for, inmates and guards to actually get along. I mean,
you're locked up together.
Woody being a career officer, I'm sure there were people you arrested that you were like, wow, in regular life, I would have actually liked this guy.
Not only that, if you treat them correctly, then you still have a good rapport with them the next time you arrest them. But when I was a correctional officer, hell, there were a lot of cons that were down, especially when I was on the working cell blocks for so long that I knew their stories. You know, I mean, shit, you got to pass 12 hours a night. I mean, you stand there and talk to them, and you know such and such, and da-da-da, you've been in this place, and it helps pass the time. But you never forget that they're a convict, and they're certainly never going to forget that you're a CO.
Right.
But it's much easier to get along.
Yeah.
Even though you're in your respective positions, it's much easier to get along. And Brent Miller had this rapport
with
the inmates.
Not only with the inmates, but with everybody he came across. Right. I mean, your mother, we spoke to her. She still cried over that. And so that I'm trying to paint a picture of here is this guy was a special individual in that everybody he met kind of fell in love with him.
Right.
You know, and just a awesome human being. And
as far as a correctional officer goes, though, he was respected by the convicts, which is special for a young one. It's hard to do, right? Yeah. So if you go to search an inmate's box, that's where they keep all their stuff. And I'm talking about in the dormitories, where they keep all their stuff for their bed. If you're a young officer, a lot of times the young officers will get in there and just start throwing shit out of their box, whatever, looking for contraband. Well, the deal is, that's their home.
Yeah.
And it's like you coming in and tearing up their shit. And then they know it has to happen, but there's two different ways you could do it. Brent was the kind of guy who would go in and do it respectfully. Hey, you know what? I got to shake you down, stand there and watch and take things out gently and look at without making a total shit show.
Yeah, he's not tossing underwear out of, right? Yeah.
And you get that respect. Brent had that respect. From all accounts, he had the respect of the inmates. But didn't mean he was a bitch. They didn't do his job. He did his job. He hammered people when he had to, but only if he had to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that made the inmates respect him. Of course, as Woody and I both said in the past, respect was everything inside of it, the bloodiest prison in America.
Yeah. So tell them what was going on. Around this time of the of course we're dealing with Bloody and Gold.
Yes. Yeah. This is the largest maximum security prison in the country, worst of the worst of air. And there's a term in prison known as bucking up.
Yep.
And bucking up is essentially where a convict will just do that, buck the system. He almost will disrespect the guards. Well, many inmates prior to the incident we're going to tell you about, the guards noticed they were bucking up. Not only the guards, but people, you know, administrators of Angola were noticing the prisoners seemed to be bucking up a lot at this time.
That's right. And so let me say this, because I've witnessed this. You can tell. I always say correctional officers don't run the prison. The inmates or the convicts run the prison, and anytime they really want to buck up, they could take it over. No doubt about it.
Yeah,
because you're inside, you got no firearms. I'm not talking about the people in towers. I'm talking about if you work on a dormitory or cell block, whatever. And most people don't have radios or whatever. The inmates run it, but there's days when you could go in. I mean, it's just like a regular day, and then there's days you could go in and you could feel a tension in the air, like holy shit. Everybody's being a little bit more quiet, or, you know, and it's, you're like, holy shit. I mean, I can feel it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh shit, something's about to go down.
Yeah. It's in the air, as you just said. And as guards, one of the things that I learned from Woody was it's not like Shawshank Redemption, y'all. There's no nightsticks in your hands or on your hips. And the reason for that is it can be taken from you.
And used on you.
And used on you.
You didn't get to carry Freeze Plus P. The supervisor could have it or radio. The people don't get that. Don't understand. When you got you walk through those gates, fuck, you locked down for your 12 hours. And I'm going to talk about this real quick. So correctional officers in general, I'm talking about the ones who work the towers, not the ones who work the fields because they work 5 days a week.
Right.
I'm talking about the ones who work inside the prison with the boots on the ground. They work 2 days on, 2 days off, 3 days on, 2 days off, 2 days on, 3 days off, all right? So you got every other weekend, 3-day weekend, but you're working 12-hour shifts from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. or 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.,
yeah,
right? Whether you're on day or night shift.
Right.
So Brent Miller was working the day shift on the main prison, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yeah. And as all this was going on, these prisoners bucking up, as we just told you, they had some incidents start popping off, I guess would be a good term for that. Things started popping off inside of Angola.
Yeah, and they don't just – it's not just a full-out riot all of a second, y'all. It builds up.
Yeah.
It's like a bad wound or something that gets pus on it, and it just goes and goes until it explodes, right?
Yeah.
So there were a lot of little things that were going on. Then there were some bigger things. But the concept of the prison – not the concept – the what was going on in Angola at the time, y'all, this is 1972. You had the first ever Black Panther movement coming in.
Yes. The only chapter of the Black Panthers that was ever credited as a legitimate Black Panther chapter inside of United States prison. And just to give everyone just a quick history on the Black Panthers, for those that may not be familiar, this was a party, a political party was what it was marketed as, that basically fought against the oppression of Black people. And it was formed by two gentlemen, Malcolm X had been assassinated, and essentially these two gentlemen had had enough, and they said, well, let's band together as Black people. We're being oppressed. And they started the Black Panther Party. In its existence, the Black Panther Party essentially became 2,000 or so members strong in its height, but it had a very, very strong presence politically. It was noticed by many, many police organizations, such as the FBI back in the days.
They were militants.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they made no bones about it.
No. It was a by any means necessary type of organization.
And now they believed 1,000% in the Constitution, and especially the part about every person being treated equal. But the difference is, they said that Black people weren't treated equally, and they were going to make sure, by hook or crook, that Black people got the fair shake. And if they had the right to bear arms to do it, then that's what they would do.
That's right. And so it was a little bit different than like Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream, right. And you know, nonviolent marches. It was a little bit different than that, and the FBI took notice. And at their height, the FBI kind of made it a goal that, hey, we're going to shut down the Black Panther Party. But there was a point in time around 1966, 67, all the way through the early 70s, where they were an extremely strong organization of Black people that they did some good things,
right.
For the race, and we'll touch on those as well. But I just wanted you to get a good history on who they were, because right. It plays a key part in the story.
A huge part of the story for over 40-50 years.
Yeah.
But that's not all the story's limited to, right? So we'll go back to it. So again, like Jim said, the Black Panthers had the only organized Black Panthers in any prison in the United States of America. But y'all also have to remember the times that the conditions were very harsh. This is when Angola was specifically known as Bloody Angola. People were getting stabbed every day. People were getting murdered every day.
Yeah. The late 60s, early 70s, were notorious at Angola for, you know, it's what gave Bloody Angola and its name.
Right.
As the bloodiest prison in America.
And Brent was living there. He was working there, right, as were his family members, et cetera. But the rapes, the murders, and I was told the story when I was there. They had a huge shortage of correctional officers, and they always have and probably always will. But like the night shift, the dormitories, they're just like, fuck it. The guards be going on out. So you have one guard for four dormitories. And back then at night, you're supposed to have two at least. But yeah. They would say they'd be like, fuck it, I'm short. They would go on the outside and lock the door from the outside, lock the inmates inside. They could do whatever they wanted to.
Yeah.
Rapes, murder, strong arming, whatever that mean. They didn't care. And the inmates were the ones who were suffering through this, right? Mm-hmm. Especially the weak.
Yeah. And keep in mind, these guards were not, they had no weapons of any type.
When I worked, we had a pager. If sugar turned to sugar, yeah. You're going downhill, you hit your button, then everybody that had a radio, which would be your higher ranking lieutenants and up, the call would go out to what we call the White House, and then the dispatcher would get on and say, everybody respond to rec room A at beeper activated. That yeah. means shit was going down. 71, 72, they didn't have that.
They had a phone.
They had a hard line phone on the desk in the dormitory.
Yeah.
And
wrap your mind around that, people.
Yeah.
And your one guard.
And your one guard. And amongst hundreds of inmates. Now, let's go back and break it down a little bit. Y'all, we're talking about the main prison in this story. And the main prison has numerous sets of dormitories. Each set is named after a tree. Like the one we're going to be talking about today is pine. Now, they had pine one, pine two, three, and four. Four dormitories, probably over 100 inmates in each dormitory. In one guard, maybe two guards, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
For all that.
Yeah.
With no fucking communication, no weapons, no nothing. What if shit happens and you can't get to the phone?
Right.
And then when you get to the phone, who the fuck's coming?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was a tough situation to be in. It was a hard time in Angola, but someone like Brent Miller. This is just another day at the office, right?
Daddy and granddaddy did it.
You
grow up with it for so long that it just becomes a norm, right?
Yes.
So let's go back to April of 1972.
Well, we talked about him bucking up.
All right. So, okay, let's talk. Tell them a couple of days before. Let's start at that. Even the guards knew it. That ship was scaling up, if you will, slowly. And over a couple of days, some things happened.
That's right. First of all, one of the instances that's interesting that the guards noticed pretty quick was bucking up can be anything from a guard telling you, move along, and you turning around saying, who are you talking to? You know, or something like that. That's probably the slightest form of bucking up. But there's other forms. One of them that is documented and that even Woody's mom spoke of was spitting on the guard tower. Right. Something they did. They would walk past and they would spit on it. Now, this is intentional.
Right.
And it's almost a form of something's about to pop right. off around here.
Right. And even on the street today, if you're street interviewing somebody and they spit on the ground in front of you, a lot of the cops don't even know that, but that's their sign of disrespect. So what you're saying was happening in the days leading up, these tensions are building and slowly they start to act out to convicts. And so walking by guards and spitting on them.
Yeah.
And I mean, holy shit, you know, you can get an ass whipping, you know, you're going in a hole, but
yeah,
maybe the hole wasn't such a bad fucking place to be when things really popped off.
That's right, especially at those times.
And the Sunday before the Monday we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a firebomb.
That's right.
And one of the towers actually got firebombed. Now, you're probably saying, how is that possible? how did they do that? And you'd be amazed what you can get in prison and matches weren't hard. They smoked back then.
That's right.
In the prison.
And smoking was the form of commerce. Cigarettes.
It was money.
But on that day, what was the date?
That would be April 16th.
On April 16th, some inmates, however the hell they got it, I don't know, threw a Molotov cocktail in the guard tower and actually slightly wounded one of the guards. Now, that's bucking up, right?
That's bucking up, yeah.
They'll make it from any type of fruit and sugar or whatever, and they'll rot it down. It's called Pruno. And the shit stinks so bad. But the deal is, when they're making it,
it'll tear you up.
Yeah. You drink it. It's, I think Mad Dog, man, when you go from sober to blacked out, it's the same thing. But the thing is that gas that comes off, when you make moonshine, when you see them throw out the four shots, that shit is so highly flammable. Most people save it to like the barbecue pits and shit with it.
Yes. Right?
So that certainly they didn't have access. Well, they might have had access to gasoline. I don't know what it was from, but it probably was some type of homemade juice.
Yeah.
They lit that bottle and threw it at. Okay, so here's the deal. Fucking dude in the guard tower's got a rifle.
Yeah.
You going to throw a firebomb at me?
Shoot to kill.
Shit's about to go off.
Yeah.
Right? What's going on? Now, the conditions, granted, they're fucking horrible. They said inmates would go to sleep at night with the phone books taped around their stomachs to stop themselves from being stabbed, or you know, somebody came to shank them while they were sleeping. It was bad.
Yeah, and so this was really the only way the prisoners would be able to protest conditions is to buck up. That's all that's the only option they had. If we buck up, they're going to know there's an issue, and so that is a progression, right?
Yes, indeed. I mean, you just hit me like a ton of bricks. So when they're bucking up, spitting on the guard when you walk by them, that didn't get any change. You throw a fucking firebomb into the tower. I'm sure some convicts got their ass whipped and went to Red Hat or wherever it was at the time. I don't think Camp J was in existence. But that was bad enough.
Yeah.
But you don't get the response. Who knows what's coming next? But what happens, y'all, when that happens, everybody, all of the free people learned about it immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
And Brent would have been off.
Yes. Yeah. Anytime that happens, that's a major event in any prison. Angola, no different. They, you know, this firebomb occurred, and everybody, all the free people at this point started talking and saying, holy shit, something's going on here. Right. That is going to get worse, because they knew there was a progression to this stuff, and in all likelihood, it wasn't going to end with a firebomb. So what do you have to do now? Well, you have to try to, number one, figure out what's going on and why they're.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Bucking up and get control of this situation, because you've got 6,000 inmates in this prison.
Right.
And as Woody said earlier, you know, in all intents and purposes, if they want to control the prison, they could have.
Absolutely. If they got united.
Yes.
If they get united enough, it's over.
Right.
So Brent would have been off. That was his long weekend. And newly married, I think 3 months.
Yeah.
It's 2 or 3 months. But they get up that morning, and his wife is nervous. Now, she's raised on Angola. And she told him, she said, "Baby, you know what happened yesterday with the firebombing?" She said, "I'm a little scared." And he's like, "I'm all right. I'm going to be safe, right?" And then she took him to work. She said later on in the interview, she couldn't remember, 6 or 6:30. I'm telling you how it used to be for me. It was 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yeah.
She takes him to work, drops him off at the gate that he had to go through. And she goes home and gets dressed. And she goes to high school. She hadn't even graduated high school yet.
Yeah. Yeah. So on to work he goes. And now, folks, these guards at this point are kind of on a high alert in their heads. Right. Imagine yourself in this situation, and you're surrounded by inmates. You have no weapons. And they've been bucking up for days.
Right.
And
progressively.
Yeah, progressively. And you know that it's probably not the end of it. But you're Brent Miller, and you also have a great rapport with everybody, including the inmates. Right. The inmates liked this guy.
Absolutely correct. And that's what my mom has told me my entire life. So he goes in and reports to work. He goes to Pine 1, where he's assigned the dormitory. He and another correction officer. Now, first thing they do in the morning is they feed him chow. Now, in the main prison, you have the different dormitories I told you about. When they went to chow, it's called chow call, right? And everybody is going to eat, lines up at the door. One of the correction officers takes you down to the mess hall. And back then, they said, you know, they would go in, and they said the guards would stand on outside and watch and whatever. But they took them to the mess hall. One guard would stay behind. Took them to the mess hall, and holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, they took them to the mess hall. And basically Brent, at this time, just, you know, he had a good rapport, and, he wanted to get some coffee and visit with a particular inmate that he was friends with
and friendly with. When they took him to the mess hall for chow that morning, they got to the mess hall and there was another buck up. 16 inmates that worked in the kitchen said, "Fuck it, we're not serving breakfast. We are bucking up. We are on strike."
Now, that's right. And what does that tell you? That tells you that word has spread throughout the prison that it's time to buck up. Remember, that means protest to these. This is a form of protesting from these prisoners of conditions at Bloody Angola at this time. So it spread through this kitchen, and all 16 of the kitchen employees basically said, "We ain't fucking serving breakfast today, and you can't make us do it."
That's exactly right. And now, y'all, you got a real shit show. You've got all these inmates from all these different dorms. And one thing, prison life is kind of monotonous, right? You do everything at certain times every day. You show up with the correction officer, show up, and they're like, "Fuck you, I'm not doing it." And their complaint was they were working 6 days a week, 16-hour days, and they said, "We want a change." Well, fuck. Now you got to take all your inmates back, lock them up on the dorm, then the powers that be respond, deal with these assholes in the kitchen,
address the situation,
them whatever, address the situation. However they got it done, they got them to cook. And then once they got the line back going, the food line, then they call back to the dormitories and say, "Bring your inmates up to eat."
Yeah.
And the guard that was working with Brent brought the inmates up to eat.
Yeah.
Brent stayed behind,
and so now you've got to keep in mind, he's the only guard. Yeah. He's the only guard amongst 100 inmates, or right, Woody?
Well, yeah, but most of them have gone to chow.
So right. That's right.
But,
that's right.
But in the morning times, there was an inmate, Ezekiel Brown, an older black man, and they said he and Brent were friends, and he would stay he would make coffee in the morning. Coffee, y'all, in prison is a big thing. You might drink 5 or 6 cups a night. Especially, it's big for the inmates. But this Brown,
So he basically he stayed behind, and Hezekiah Brown stayed. And one thing in prison, you don't have to go eat.
Right.
You don't have to. You know, they basically say line up to eat. If you don't line up to eat, you get locked in. That's right. Yeah. And you know, they don't. You just don't get chow that day. So Hezekiah Brown stayed back. Brent Miller was back there, and there were some other.
Hi everyone. I'm Dr. John White, WebMD's Chief Medical Officer and host of the Spotlight On series from WebMD's Health Discovered podcast. For this special 2-part episode, you'll hear up close and personal journeys about being diagnosed with a rare type of cancer, multiple myeloma.
I started in myeloma nearly 25 years ago. And at that time, the average expectation of life in someone with myeloma was maybe 1 to 2 years. But even just in this last 10 to 12 years, we have doubled, if not tripled, the average survival of patients. I saw a new patient this week, and we had this conversation that based on what we've done over the last decade, my expectation is that patient's going to live more than 10 years.
Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Gentlemen, I would assume back there as well.
Well, the from all accounts, Brent Miller sits down on one of the inmates' bunks and gets his cup of coffee with Ezekiel Brown.
Just talking to him.
And then all of a sudden, 4 inmates run up, surprising Brent, attack him, hold him down, stab him at least 32 times. Some accounts say as high as 39 times with a sharpened lawnmower blade. Stabbing to death.
To death. And look, let's put this into perspective real quick. You just killed a guard in the most heinous way possible. A sharpened lawnmower blade. You didn't stab him 10 times. You didn't stab him 20 times. You stabbed him a minimum of 32 times.
And let me tell you this. If you are on the street and you're trying to just handcuff a guy, and Brent was a big boy, like Jim said, big, strong country boy.
Athletic
and young.
Yeah.
If you're trying to take an average-sized guy down and he's fighting and you want to get him in handcuffs, it may take 4 or 5 guys if you don't have any freeze or whatever. I can promise you, it took all 4 of them to hold Brent down once he realized what was going on. But I think the shock of it, it just had to be so much for him because everybody liked him. Supposedly, while he was down and being brutally stabbed. Now, this came from my mama, who's always heard this her entire life. And she told you, Jim, today.
This is a guy that had a great rapport with these prisoners. And so as they're stabbing him with a lawnmower blade over and over and over again, 32 times, The last words that came out of his mouth were, "Why are you doing this to me?" Think about that. Think about that. Why are you doing this to me? As they're just pounding him.
Count this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 30, 31, 32. At least that many stabs, y'all.
Minimum. And that's what's coming out of his mouth, because as Woody just said, he had a rapport with these guys and never suspected, never knew what hit him, probably, right off. And so then you're confused.
Yeah.
You know, it's shock. Shock.
Shock. Being murdered in the most personal, intimate way. And it was never proven, and we're going to tell you all the rest of the story on the next episode, but it was never proven. But I would almost guarantee you, if I'm one of the four that are stabbing you to death, each motherfucker that's stabbing with me is going to take a turn. I would bet you that they all took turns. That way you have, you can't rat on each other.
Yeah, and there's so much more to this story. These inmates that were involved in this eventually became known as the Angola Three.
It should have been four.
Should have been, and we'll tell you why in the next episode.
Right. But on this one, and Jim and I talked about this for long and hard, y'all. We've watched every documentary. We've read every book. We really did our homework on this one. And this is a story I've been hearing since I was a little boy. And my mama today cried, because it's just like, for her, it was like yesterday. We wanted to tell who Brent Miller was as a human being, what kind of person he was. Because in all these documentaries and stuff, except for maybe one, they don't do that shit.
Yeah.
You know, Brent Miller was a living, loving, breathing human being, a son, a husband, a friend, a former student, my mom.
Yeah. Someone that everybody liked.
A great guy.
Yeah, just a great
guy. An athlete.
Guy.
Just he was a human being, y'all. And then what gets lost in these stories that come after is the fact that Brent Miller's a human being, and Jim and I wanted to put the human face. And I promised my mama, and Jim heard it, that I was going to put the human face, or we were going to put the human face on Brent Miller. One last thing, today, and even in 1990 or 91, when I was there, the firing range is named after Brent Miller.
Yeah. So that tells you the respect that Brent had, even at a young age of 23, throughout Angola, and a generational guard. So he was not only just an amazing human being, but he was someone who grew up in that environment. His family grew up in that environment. He was very beloved by Angola.
Yeah, and left a lasting impact on everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
So tune in next week, because holy smokes.
We're just getting started.
This is a hard story, y'all. It's a horror story. Our hearts go out to this day, and to anybody that knew him and loved him.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And we hope we do it justice. Yeah. This incident and this story, and it gets deeper from here. So we look forward to telling you even more facts about this case that we've been able to dig up that you may not be aware of.
Right. And appreciate y'all listening.
Yeah.
If you like it, please. I want to thank y'all. First episode dropped. We went to number 5 in the world.
Blows my mind.
Because of y'all. And actually, we're pre-recording this a little bit, so the second episode we just dropped today, and we don't even know where it's at yet. But thank y'all. Please go anywhere.
That you please like and, you know, comment, subscribe, do all those things on any social media network that you maybe listen to this on. Leave a review. Very important. People cannot find a podcast on Apple Podcasts typically unless they know the exact name. Unless you leave a review, it helps with the analytics with Apple Podcasts. So you don't have to get in, you know, if you don't want to take the time to write a paragraph or something, you don't have to just hit those 5 stars and underneath put great, you know, one word comment. If you don't like the show, put it, you know, tell us what we can do better. We'll take that. We appreciate all of y'all watching. You can get all these episodes in audio and video format. Conglomerate of ways. One is to go to the website bloodyangolapodcast.com. There you'll find everything you need to listen to it right from that website or watch it. You can go to YouTube, where the difference between our audio episodes and our video episodes on YouTube is that's more of an experience. And what we mean by that is not only do you get to see me and Woody kind of go into these zones as we talk about these cases and get goosebumps and all those sorts of things, but you also get to see pictures. We'll have, for example, on this episode, pictures of Brent Miller up and pictures of the people that were, eventually accused will be on future episodes. So
the last episode you dropped today, you had a picture of my dad.
I did.
As a young man.
I did. Boy, he is a handsome one. Woody Overton. I see where you get your looks from.
Y'all, I'm going to tell you something. I listen to the podcast naturally. But holy shit, I'm totally into the YouTube thing now. I got to say that.
Yeah.
I don't do it on my other podcasts, and I'm not consistently.
Right. And it's something that we try to do to bring y'all the best absolute content we can. It requires a lot more work on our end, but Jim, we don't mind.
Jim does that. Envision Podcast Studio does that, and it's fire. Go watch it.
Yeah, please do.
I had to tell my mom today about it because I wanted her to see the picture of dad and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, okay, I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So we put a lot of time and care into that, and appreciate you watching it. Even if you're listening to it and listen to it, then go check out the YouTube. It's a totally different experience that you'll really like. So thank all of y'all for watching. As Woody said, we're rising up those charts and we love that because we know it puts attention on what we're talking about and we feel like it's important. It
validates us.
It's
like our baby, right?
Like
watching your baby graduate cum laude or something.
That's right.
It is a little vanity or whatever, but I mean, when you beat Katie Couric and all these other people,
Snoop Dogg, we're coming for you.
Snoop Dogg's number one, we're coming for you, baby.
That's it. Dropping it like it's hot.
You meet all these big multi-million dollar production companies. Holy shit.
Yeah. It's a self-produced podcast, and we can't tell you how much we appreciate it. So, I'm Jim Chapman again.
And I'm Woody Overton. And last thing, our sponsors, we love you.
Yes.
Thank you so much. And
couldn't do it without them.
Couldn't do it. Absolutely. Wouldn't have happened without them. Mm-mm. So y'all, please, our sponsors are going to be throughout the show. Every one of them, we've listened to them or we've used their products. We back them 1,000%. And thank y'all. You rock.
Yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
And you listeners, you rock.
You rock. Yeah, set my socks on fire every week. Ooh, Woody, baby.
Hey, Jim and I were like, y'all, we should have made a video of ourselves the whole weekend long, checking the numbers and people commenting. Oh, my God, y'all's comments and all the different things are just – it's just so much love.
Total love.
We love y'all back.
Yeah, we do. We do. Love you much. And so that's it. Until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
And we'll see you next time with another episode of Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years
in the making.
Peace.
Peace.
Yeah, the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights? And the wolf is
is at your door. Your running's over, that's for sure. He already knows all about you. Cut you down, don't murder by you. Now you better walk the line. Real life, real crime.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.